Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for the month of May. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. We certainly are in the midst of spring here, but it's not the kind of spring I would like to see. Seems like we've had nothing but rain and more rain, and after that, a little bit more rain even. One of these days, the weather will break, but I'm not quite sure when. Maybe sometime around July. Despite the rain, we've got lots to do this month on Council Connection. We'll be talking to David Kingsbury about his newly published book. We'll hear from Brian Charlson as he spoke to us at the annual Spring Conference and Convention this year. And we'll start by talking to Bob Hache about Blind Day, among other things. Welcome back to Council Connection for the second month in a row. Last month we talked about Blind Day, and how did that go, by the way?
Well, I wasn't able to attend, but I heard it went well, and it does seem to keep growing the number of people that attended, which I think is awesome because it's our opportunity, obviously, to advocate for funding for our services for things like the Talking Book Library, the Commission for the Blind, as well as special education. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I heard that it went well, and it was very well run from what I've heard, and the speakers did well. I never did get a chance to listen to it. I think TIC does it. I've got to get it on the rebound here and actually listen to some of the ceremony. I always like to hear some of the different speakers because you learn a little something from each and every
sure.
one of our speakers.
Do we know how many people attended?
Not exactly, but I believe it was well up over 100. And,
well, that's good.
You know, and you had volunteers, and it's great because you get volunteers to help you get around that state house, which is a very
right.
complex building to get
yeah.
around. So I've got really good news for everybody here.
Okay.
Last week, the House of Representatives did what I call the second part of the budget. The first part, you'll recall, is where the governor proposes his or her part of the budget. And in the House budget, there was a major increase in the community services line item, the Commission for the Blind, which is what we were hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually hoping for a $250,000 increase, which was actually put right into the budget as it was proposed. And then another amendment added another $250,000. So the total governor's proposed budget for community services was $6,074,905. And the House final budget as it came out after amendments was actually $6,574,900. $250,000 of it was what we had asked for. Now, they did not include the language to earmark it for technology for seniors. So it'll be up to us now to go to the commission and say, hey, we are hoping and expecting that at least the lion's share of that $250,000 is going to get used for the senior technology training and equipment that we were asking for here.
Well,
and hopefully we will get that.
I'm a little bit confused here, and maybe if I'm confused, other people are too.
Perhaps, sure.
You said $250,000 is what we asked for.
That's correct.
You
I'm
said,
blinded.
Then you said we got $500,000. So it sounds...
No, we actually got a total of $500,000. We got the $250,000 we asked for. And then what happens is this. The Ways and Means makes a proposal. Then that gets debated on the floor of the House. And an amendment added an additional $250,000 for a grand total of $500,000 of new money in
okay,
that
but,
account.
Okay, but isn't that really, in essence, double what we thought we would get?
It is double because of the amendment process, yes.
Okay.
But it's not necessarily for the items that we wanted it for.
Oh.
The other $250,000 is for a series of radio reading services, which I'll mention here in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
But we did get the $250,000. Now, there was no language that requires what they get spent for because, see, the community services item funds a lot of different things. Everything from rehabilitation teaching to social services, supplies and equipment, things like canes, large print address books, sometimes magnification devices, things of that nature. Oh, and also copies of software such as JAWS or NVDA. Well, NVDA is free, but possibly Zoom Text, for example.
Right, right. Because, you know, JAWS is, you're thinking about, you know, roughly $1,000.
Yes, exactly.
For each new copy, so.
And services and equipment for seniors certainly could include JAWS. JAWS is
absolutely
you know, software.
Or Zoom Text. Or
yes,
Zoom Text,
exactly.
Because, you know, for those with limited
sure.
vision or with some vision who don't necessarily want to use a screen reader, they can use Zoom Text.
That's correct. So that's 250,000. There was no earmarking language, but that is a 250 that was included in the House budget. And then there was 250,000 where it says there's an amendment that was passed that says not less than $50,000 shall be spent on a series of smaller radio reading services. The five smaller radio reading services, and they are located throughout the state, are Audible Local Ledger, Audio Journal Incorporated, Berkshire Talking Chronicle, Lowell Association for the Blind, and Valley Eye Radio. That's EYE, as in your eyes, Valley Eye Radio.
Now, are all of these radio reading services that currently, I mean, I know some of them, I recognize the names, but it sounds like maybe we've got some new ones here, or do
it's
we know
possible that? Because I don't recognize them all either. That's a good question. Not really sure. But those are going to get at least $50,000 of new funding. And like I said, that's thanks to that amendment that was added in to the House Ways and Means when it was engrossed into the final House budget. So what we want is for the Senate budget to be at least $250,000 above the original $6,074,905 that was proposed by the governor's budget. But this is tremendous, folks. It means that we all who participated in Blind Day, and even though I didn't go, I did make phone calls to my reference senator urging them to support.
And in some ways, that's the more important thing to do anyway.
Well, I mean, absolutely.
It's nice to be there as a show of bodies, but
that's right.
I think when the rubber hits the road, it's really the individual phone calls that make more of an impression.
Well, it's both. I mean, the phone calls are good, and it's important that in one way or another, as many people as possible do contact.
Right.
But part of the importance of being there is that you actually do get to show up in this person's office and telling a staff member face-to-face what some of these services mean to me, for example, and you've got a face and a name attached to it then. So that is important, too. They're both are important.
Actually. Now, does the Senate get to pick and choose different individual projects or line items?
Yes,
something?
If it wants to, it could propose something different.
So conceivably—
And then you could get Senate amendments that propose different things as well after. See, what happens is the Senate Ways and Means Committee will come out with the first proposal, then that gets debated on the entire floor of the Senate.
Okay. So just because the House proposed these items doesn't mean that in the final Senate budget they're going to survive. So we're not out of the woods yet, or at least the services that were mentioned are not out of the woods yet.
And then the other thing that happens too, Steve, is that there is a compromise committee that gets together to go over any differences. So if there are differences, let's say for the sake of argument that these amendments, let's say we get the $250,000 that we all wanted on Blind Day, but perhaps those amendments don't go through. So then the Senate committee that will then have to get in there and decide whether or not they want to include that extra $250,000 that was in the amendments for the radio reading services. And that either will or won't, or maybe part of it will or part of it won't. When the numbers are both the same, then it stays the same in the final budget.
So ideally,
and
then
that's
it sounds like what you want is you want some consensus among the House and Senate as to what they're willing to go forward with. And that'll keep it from getting into the sausage maker.
Yep. Absolutely. And we want some good sausage, don't we? Not too spicy, not too bland.
Yes, but I guess what we really want is the sausage to kind of come already pre-made, so to speak, as opposed to having it go through the process again.
Ideally, yes. That's right. Yep. Not always how it works, but that's what we'd like. And thanks again for everybody who has advocated for these Commission for the Blind services.
All right. Well, thank you, Bob, for joining us again this month. And helping us to sort out the budgetary picture here.
Yep.
And let's hope that it all goes the way we hope it will. Something on your mind? Call us on Fillmore, 773-572-6312.
Hello. You've reached the Bay State Council of the Blind.
We'd love to hear from you. David Kingsbury has been an active member of BSCB for several years. He's our first vice president. He's the author of Bay Lines Express. But he's here tonight to talk about something he's done outside of BSCB. Good evening, David. Welcome to Council Connection, and congratulations on your new book.
Thanks for having me, Steve, and thanks for the congratulations.
Well, tell me a little bit about the process here. I know you're a man of many talents, but it surprised even me a little bit when I saw your the notice that said you'd been published.
Well, I I enjoy writing, as I'm sure you know, because I get a kick out of doing the Baylines Express. And I'm a trainer at the Carroll Center, and I enjoy that too. So sometime, you know, last summer or so, I thought it might be an interesting challenge to try to write a book on some tech topic. And I came up with the issue of formatting Word documents for a few reasons. And as you know, down the street from the Carroll Center in Boston is the National Braille Press, and they've been publishing documents on tech topics for quite some time. And I thought that was a logical place to approach. So I called up the technical editor. Her name's Cassell Wilson. She replaced Diane Croft, who was there for many years. And she said, sounds like an interesting idea. Put out an outline, because I can't really respond to just verbal stuff. Put out an outline. So I put something out, and she said, let's go for it. And I chose that topic for a couple of reasons, at least. I get clients or students at the Carroll Center of all ages. I think the youngest has been 14 and the oldest is 92.
Wow.
And and you know, adults and students with different needs. And for the adults, I've run into a number of clients who they may have been putting together Word documents, you know, with JAWS for a number of years, but often they're just not that confident that what they have written looks right.
Well, you know, I have to say that even among many sighted people, putting together a Word document is something that people do mostly by pounding away on the keyboard and assuming that it's kind of like a typewriter. But when it comes to really knowing what they're doing, I find very few people who do. And I'm speaking from the point of view of somebody who's been in programming for, well, 30 years or so before I retired, and kind of in publishing after I retired and doing things with various newsletters and stuff. And people just don't know very much about the whole process of formatting and how a word processor works and what to do. And I wish I had a nickel for every time I've gone looking for answers that nobody seemed to have. And I probably should have come to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I agree on that because, you know, back in my sighted days, you know, I worked in an office where I did have to put together often pretty large documents. But a point came fairly early in the process where, you know, where I worked, we happened to have a number of executive secretaries, and you handed the documents off to them to finish them off. So, you know, I've learned some things since becoming blind that I've thought, oh, my goodness, if I had known that stuff 20 years ago, all the time I could have saved.
That's right.
So, but of course, you know, there's an even bigger challenge if you're visually impaired because you can't see what's on the screen. You know, at least a sighted person can see that they've screwed something up. But it's a bit dicey when you're blind. So anyway, you know, that was certainly an area where I saw a potential need.
Well, and not only can we not see what's on the screen, but often what I've found is that the instructions for fixing things, no matter who they're from, are things like, well, you know, you kind of zip over here with the mouse and you double click on this and you know, and that's not going to do us a lot of good.
You drag from here to there and you hit the red button and all that type of stuff.
Right.
But for students, they had, I thought, a special interesting challenge that I was not really aware of till 2 or 3 years ago. You know, back when I was putting together papers back in college and stuff, I had a manual typewriter and a tube of whiteout.
And yeah, same here. And I tried not to use the whiteout if I could help it. And everything was, one shot from start to finish, and you just hope that you got it right.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, nowadays, of course, you know, it's much easier to put together a document,
right,
edit it, and so on. I would never want to go back to typewriter days.
Oh, no, 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 me either.
And I can't imagine, you know, I did all that when I could see. I can't imagine how, you know, blind students did it 20, 30 years ago. I've heard people, you know, like Brian, you know, he told me a story of having to do all this whiteout and when he couldn't even see this stuff.
I can tell you from having been one of those students that a lot of things were very difficult to do, and maybe the most frustrating thing is to have, and it's a classic kind of problem that you don't see anymore, is you type a 20-page paper only to discover that your typewriter had been on stencil.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And you might not know that until you handed it in, at which point the professor would say, well, this would be great if I could only read it. But
yeah, no, I can't imagine what that was like. But you know, nowadays, though, you know, students, they have a whole special new set of challenges because there are these different academic style guides that, depending on what your discipline is, you need to follow those in college. There's
right.
the APA for social sciences. There's MLA and Chicago Manual of Style for things that are more humanities and the like.
I imagine there's some for scientific treatises and engineering ones and heaven only knows what else.
And it can get pretty detailed, and I couldn't go into all of that detail.
No, of course not.
The one thing that I just failed to find is any reference that would sort of translate some of those requirements into language that, you know,
that we could use.
Could use.
Yeah.
So,
and of course, the expectation now that and I think for many sighted people, the assumption is that, well, hey, you've got a screen reader. It tells you everything that's on the screen. So just quit your complaining and go start using the word processor that you can now use. And that's great, except that what there is for us is an increased expectation that we're going to produce the same kind of material that sighted people do. And if we can't do it, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. But anyways, you know, 2-3 years ago, we at the Carroll Center, particularly during the summer, we have, you know, younger people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I every year teach a class called Computing for College. And I would have, you know, high school seniors, college freshmen asking me, you know, how do I put this in APA style or MLA? And of course, my question was back to them was, what is APA? What is MLA? And I knew I had to do some homework to catch up on that.
Yes.
And I did, and I found it was complicated. So I had some, you know, definitely some teasing out to do. And frankly, I needed some sighted assistance from time to time.
Sure.
So I knew what I was writing down was accurate because the instructions simply were not accessible. So I've been able to translate most of that so that, you know, it should be accessible now for blind students. And I've got to say, you know, programs like JAWS and NVDA, particularly JAWS, as well as Word, have some great, very, very powerful tools for helping out on formatting. And,
right.
you know, most blind folks don't know about these as much as they should. And anyway, I tried to bring those out and explain them and show how people can use them, you know, if you're in a job situation or you're just in a situation where, you know, you want to create a document that's that looks presentable. And it's doable. And there are some great tools there for it, but they definitely need some explaining. So tried to do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's certainly an effort that we've needed for a long time, and I don't think you're going to have any trouble getting people to purchase this book in great quantities. It's available, as you said before, from NBP, and it's in a few different formats, isn't it?
Yes, it's in Word, eBraille, DAISY, also, hard copy Braille
right.
can be bought
right.
in that format
mm-hmm.
too,
mm-hmm.
and in the range of $18 to $20, depending on which format you
right.
choose.
Right, the hard copy Braille probably being the most expensive.
I would assume so. Yeah. And I think it's two volumes in Braille. It was interesting when I was talking to the editor at National Braille Press. She talks in terms of, is it going to be one volume or two volumes? And this wound up being two volumes, but you sort of have to make it. It's either going to be one volume. It can't be one volume and a smidge over. It's going to be sort of two full volumes. So it's two volumes.
What does a volume run? About 100 Braille pages, something like that?
You know, I can't translate into Braille pages, but it's about 18,000 words. Depending. I was actually told yours sort of breaks the mold a little bit because I have, you know, I list a lot of things. And when you list a lot of things, that takes up
more space. Yeah.
More space.
Yep.
But in terms of Word, you know, in terms of the Word document itself, it's about the main body of the text, I think, is in the neighborhood of 70 to 80 pages.
Okay.
So not super, super long, but not super short either, because there's a lot of stuff to be covered there.
I usually think of three Braille pages for every print page, and that's a rough approximation because, of course, depending on the size of print pages. But anyway, that's not really the most important part of it. The most important part of it is what do people have to do if they want to buy this book, which I can't imagine why they wouldn't want to.
Well, go to the NBP website. I don't have the exact URL in my head. But
www.nbp.org.
Yeah, and there is a page where you go for technical books that they've written because, you know, they write books on all sorts of topics, you know, children's books and so on. And my book is listed there.
Okay. Can you give us the title again?
The title is Formatting Word Documents with JAWS and NVDA, A Guide for Students and Professionals. I wanted to make sure to get that word students in there. Because,
That's right.
I hope it makes a useful contribution for them.
Oh, I think it will. I think it will.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you the best of luck in this endeavor. I think you're gonna. I think you've found a good niche here, and maybe not even that big, not that small a niche either, because there's an awful lot of folks going to college, and an awful lot of folks who, in their post-college life, have to work with documents and put documents together, and are expected to do so with some degree of finesse. So.
I wrote that hopefully this book will, you know, level the formatting playing field a bit because, again, sighted people often, it's just a question of looking at what's on the paper and mimicking it, and that's more complicated if you can't see what's on the paper.
But, you know, even that can get you into trouble sometimes. I mean, the classic case that I always say to people when I'm thinking about that is the person who wants to center something and they go to the beginning of the line and they hit a number of spaces and tabs until the thing is centered on the screen, which of course works very nicely until they reformat the document, at which point all bets are off.
Oh yeah, no, sighted people have all sorts of unique and interesting ways to mess up. And in a way, you know, as visually impaired folks, you know, we have to be extra careful because we can't see that. You know, one analogy I think of is, you know, since I've become blind, I actually fall down and trip a lot less than when I could see because I got to pay more attention to
it's
where
true.
I'm walking
it's,
to.
Absolutely. And it's funny because people often ask us, well, aren't you afraid of falling? I said, no, but I'm afraid of you tripping me.
Yeah. You know? I'm afraid of falling, not as afraid as I would need to be, simply because I'm always thinking about, am I going to fall or not?
That's right.
And
that's
as
right.
a result, I don't. Of course, I just say this, and 5 minutes after this, after I'm off the phone, I'm going to fall down the stairs.
Well,
it's
fortunately,
it's going to be your fault.
Right. But fortunately, we will not be around to hear the crash, and neither will anybody listening to the show.
Okay.
Although
well,
we may report on it later.
Okay.
To buy a copy of David's new book in the format of your choice, visit www.nbp.org or call the National Braille Press at 888 865-8965. You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can find past shows in the Council Connection archive at www.acbfma.org. To round out this month's show, let's go back to our spring convention and listen to Brian Charlson as he reports to us on the state of BSCB.
Well, as always, good morning, everybody. I want to tell you a couple of things this morning. One is that yesterday, the commissioner at the Mass Commission for the Blind, David Darkangelo, held a informational summit and invited the, if you will, the movers and shakers in the blindness field here in Massachusetts together to get kind of a primer on how MCB works. And there was the usual suspects, you know, Carroll Center, Perkins, National Braille Press, Mass Association for the Blind, you know, all of the regular players, a few that I had never met before, who perhaps we should get on this program because they're kind of the sleepers in the background providing services through MCB. The number one message of that day was collaboration and partnership. And that's what made me quite pleased with the day's event, because not only were the agencies for the blind present, but the organizations of the blind were present. I must also say that a lot of the leadership throughout the blindness system out there in Massachusetts has blind people in administration who can be real game changers in what rehabilitation, both vocational rehabilitation and social rehabilitation, can be here in Massachusetts. As you know, Kim and I do quite a bit of traveling around the country, and so we've heard a lot of commissioners or head of agencies give reports. And the statistics reported to us yesterday were clear, made it very clear that we're lucky to be in the Bay State. We are lucky to be in the Bay State if your need is transportation. We're lucky if you're in the Bay State if you need special education. We're lucky to be in the Bay State if you need rehabilitation. And we're lucky in the Bay State that it's done not by one mega entity, but by such a wide variety of not-for-profit organizations and state government. I have friends from all around the country, many of whom have no access to real transportation. That doesn't mean there's not moments when paratransit doesn't show up on time or vice versa. But the breadth of our paratransit system is vastly better than the vast majority of this country. When it comes to support for college students to go with support from the state agency, ours has one of the most liberal support systems in the country. Could all of these things be better? Absolutely. Are we going to slow down and trying to advocate for it? No way. It can always be better. But before I start advocating for anything, I first give thanks for what I have. And I hope all of you take time from time to time to express that appreciation for what each of us have. Speaking of appreciation, there are so many people who make Bay State what it is. And I want to spend most of my time this morning, not all of it, but most of it, giving thanks with examples of why to be thankful. My first vice president, David Kingsbury. You in the room, David?
I'm here.
He's there. Now, David is first vice president, and that means that when I'm incognito for one reason or another, he steps in, and he certainly did a fine job of that during our fall conference, right? Many of you were there. And he takes the lead on that each year. But also there's what publication? Baylines Express, that David gets out like clockwork. And it really does help us all keep very, very well informed about what's going on around us. It's kind of like having a clipping service, you know, somebody out there, so you don't have to read 12 newspapers, 25 different newsletters and all that kind of thing. So thank you, David, for all you do for the Bay State Council of the Blind. My second vice president needs no introduction, Mr. Frank Ventura. Without his leadership, this conference would be hurting pretty bad. And it's not just this. He is definitely a opinion leader here in the Bay State. He also, of course, keeps me on the straight and narrow, which isn't always that easy. But I very much appreciate his support throughout this conference and everything that makes the Bay State Council what it is. We have a treasurer, Mr. Rick Morin. Rick. Now, as with most of us, the definition of treasurer has this line that says, and other duties as assigned. And Rick is the personification of other duties as assigned. He's the AV guy here for the convention. He also serves us all quite well as our representative on the new RTAG, dealing with transit services through the MBTA. I don't want you to think that he's the only one involved in transportation. Mary Haroyan, board member. Mary, you here? Yes. Has been a real champion toward transportation systems outside of the Boston area. And even though we weren't successful at getting her appointed to a certain board, she has nonetheless not let that slow her down in terms of her advocacy for quality transportation throughout the Commonwealth. Secretary Jerry Berry, are you there? Jerry, again, performs many functions within the Bay State Council of the Blind. You saw him out at the registration table sharing that with Frank last night. Of course, he does the minutes. And having been secretary once or twice during my long checkered career, I will tell you that it's no fun. It truly is not. Taking minutes makes it sound easy. Doing the taking of minutes ain't easy. Getting it right, being willing to hear some modifications from those who were present to improve the quality of the final product, and getting it posted in a timely way, that's Jerry. So thank you very, very much, Jerry, for all you do for Bay State Council. Now, one more officer who is not here this morning is Bob Hache, immediate past president. Now, Bob does a number of things in the background, some things in the foreground. Of course, he's the editor of Baylines, the, if you will, hard copy, once every 4 months publication that comes out from Bay State Council. But he also is the guy behind the lists that we deal with, making sure that all of that technology actually continues to work effectively for us. Bob isn't here today because he's not feeling well. He's fighting, as each of us have from time to time, with medical issues. So, Bob, I'm hoping that you're listening on Zoom Cloud Meeting or ACB Radio. And, again, we do appreciate what you bring to the council, Bob. I already mentioned Mary as one of our board members, and she's also the chair of our membership committee. And I have to tell you that our membership records have never been as clean as they are today. There are, you know, our guests are from Chicago, so they're used to a lot of, shall we say, dead weight still on the rolls, right? So we've done a fair amount of cleaning up of our records this year. Mary also has an active committee and makes sure that people that we hear are moving into the state are picked up. They don't move into the state from one ACB affiliate and just get lost in the shuffle. Mary's on top of that. When we get reports from the national office about who the scholarship applicants were, then Mary's team gets involved in reaching out to those individuals who are in Massachusetts. So thank you again, Mary. Also on our board, Rose Miller. Rose, you here? There she is. Now, Rose has given me a new fear of bowling. Rose is our social committee chair, and a couple of nice events have been held through that and will continue to be held by Bay State, because it's not just a matter of doing business. Sometimes it's a matter of having that social contact with one another. Now, she also is quite good at getting the ladies in her acquaintance to volunteer for us. And some of them, last year when I got to go to the bowling, I didn't get a chance to do it this year, hadn't been bowling themselves before. So imagine yourself trying to help a blind person bowl when you don't know what the game's all about. But they did it with a smile on their face, and very much appreciated. Of course, if you were at the fall conference, there were refreshments in the morning. And that was 100% as a result of outreach and donation from Panera's through Rose's contact. So again, thank you, Rose, for what you do for the council. Which other board members are present this morning? Don't want to call on you if you're still up in your room. I knew about those. There, Diana Leddard. There we go. So, Diana, how many young people do we have here this year? I think more than we've had in years. No. I think that anybody younger than me is young. Okay? But again, if you were to take the average age in this room today versus 3 years ago, the age dropped. That is not the case in most of ACB's affiliates. The age is growing as the rest of us do. But we've actually got a good, vital group of young people in the organization, and we are reminded of that at each of our board meetings, thanks to Ms. Leonard in the process. I'd also, who else have I got? Cheryl. Now, Cheryl was also at that summit yesterday, because believe it, Cheryl is a mover and shaker in the blindness system in this Commonwealth. With her involvement with, I always get it backwards, so forgive me, Our Space, Our Place, she is a real game changer for what it means to be blind youth and making sure that they are informed about what their futures could be if they put energy into it. And talk about energy. That outfit is very energized. But she's also anxious to make sure that each and every person in this room is registered to vote. I hope all of you are registered to vote, because participation begins at the polling booth. You need to be there. You need to make a point of participating. And Cheryl reminds us of that on a regular basis, and very much appreciated as well. I didn't take my shoes off, so I haven't counted high enough with these toes down here to know if I've missed anything. I would tell you that it doesn't stop with elected officials. It goes on to appointed folks like Deanne Elliott. Deanna, you here? Deanne? Yeah, there she is. She is the chair of our legislative committee, and it is an active committee, and is not exclusively, you know, pushing for legislation on the state and national level. It's also being active in anything that is a real system changer. She has taken the lead on two major activities. One is our relationship with Mass Eye and Ear, making sure that health institutions that we depend on become more and more accessible to us in all ways one can define accessibility. And recently we entered into yet another relationship with a little place called the Common App. We've sent a letter, well, what legal people sometimes call a demand letter through a pro bono lawyer that has helped us on a variety of other cases over the years. And we are going to make sure that any student who wants to apply to college, who's a blind or visually impaired person, is going to have access to that online application process that more than five, how many colleges use that? More than 400 colleges use this system as their primary, if not exclusive, way to apply. And yet that application process online is not accessible. So we're not shying away from the big subjects. It's not just things that are housed in Massachusetts that we take advocacy points on. We also do it on things that affect Bay Staters, but also the rest of the country as well. So we are seen, in a large part because of Deanne's involvement in these kinds of issues, as a national player at ACB and in the blindness system. While I'm talking about those kinds of things, I want you to know I am a Netflix-aholic. And I'm only a Netflix-aholic because ACB got involved in making sure that Netflix had audio description and that Netflix was navigable through whatever application you were using to reach out to it. We, the Bay State, joined with our national organization to enter into a similar arrangement with Hulu, the second largest such system. And right now we have just sent a demand letter to another little entity called HBO. So we are knocking them down one at a time, but you know, they're growing faster than we can knock them down. So we're looking at methodology that would allow us to actually modify the laws and regulations. We've already proven it can be done. That is the new low bar. So any entity that's not providing pass-through of audio description, is not providing accessible platforms for accessing what's totally taking over what we used to advocate for, accessible cable. You know, the minute we get accessible something, something supersedes it, right? Kim, in fact, is going to be leaving here on Sunday afternoon, and she's going to be going to Washington, D.C. to meet with a little entity called the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. A judge insisted that the parties get together and chat a bit, because they've seen our efforts to try to enforce what our legal successes should have made possible. So she's off to there for meetings on Monday morning. So we're advocating left and right. I've mentioned the social committee. I've mentioned the legislative committee. I've also, you know, Frank doesn't do this convention by himself. So there's a convention committee that's kind of made up of thousands. You know, I talk to anybody and they say, oh yeah, I'm on the on the convention committee. I'm in charge of, making sure the rooms all have coffee or something. So committees make the world go round. Leaders lead them, but committees actually do the work. So nonetheless, we have all of these different entities doing things. The sound crew is not just Rick. It's also Steve, you over there? Yep. Steve Dresser's over there. And again, Council Connection, another way to learn what's going on in the blindness system around the country. Is Tim with you up there? Yes. And Mr. Tim Cummings, who also helps keep all things electronic moving in a positive direction. You know, when you see on the program that the president's going to give a report, it makes it sound like the president is the person that makes it happen. And I'm here to tell you, I'm just proud that I am not what makes it happen. It's all these wonderful people. There's so many organizations that are struggling to find who's going to lead next. Well, I just gave you a list of people, all of whom are capable of leading this organization. They've proven it through deed, not just rhetoric. They do it every day. The health of the Bay State Council of the Blind is a can be measured by a combination of things. One is how many people are participating. And we get an A-plus on that. It's how they're doing in terms of getting out and having impact, being, if you will, the specialists that people go to when they want to know something about blindness. We are in that list. It's also how we're doing financially. Don't forget that, you know. Money makes the world go round, right? And we are financially healthy. Perfect? No. Healthy? Yes. The board invested a significant part of our resources so that we can begin getting increased value for that. Rather than just like you sitting in a checking account, we've invested it. And while the stock market does give me, you know, angina a bit, right, with its ups and downs and the like, nonetheless, we have an investment policy, we have an investment process, and we're making sure that we're good stewards of the monies that we raise. You're going to hear from us over the course of the next couple of days where we're headed a bit within Bay State, because there are things that we have no control over if we just keep doing them the same way. In this hotel, while it almost feels like going home, right? To the summer home where you go and you're familiar with where the restaurant is and the Starbucks is and the front desk and the meeting rooms. That's really terrific. But the cost of hotel presentations. So we have a hugely expensive process here. Audiovisual alone, and we provide a lot of the equipment ourselves, and certainly most, the vast majority of the labor, costs this convention $800 to use these microphones, to use the internet. That's just one example of the high cost of things. If you were a little shaky when you saw the cost of meals, welcome to the world of doing things in a hotel. Used to be that the hotels made money by phone charges. Well, they just transferred those revenue sources to other things they charge you for. So we are looking at how can we improve what we do in terms of stewarding, getting the most bang for our buck when we spend it. So don't be surprised at all if we look at this conference dramatically differently, helping keep the price down so that everybody can afford to go, and helping us make sure that the money that we're spending gets the most bang for that buck. That's just one example of where we're likely to go, but we don't do anything without your input. So I want to ask you all something, and that is to help us grow as an organization. To grow as an organization, we need more members. How many legally blind people are there in the Commonwealth? 70,000. 70,000. No, I didn't say on the MCB roll. This is statistically how many people there are. 70,000 blind and visually impaired people. On the MCB rolls, you know, this is what we all think. Well, if you're blind, you have to be on the roll. It doesn't work that way. The doctor has to report you as being a blind person for that to happen. And most of them are not doing so. So 70,000 people are blind or visually impaired and need our assistance to speak on their behalf, to assure that services are available. Even if we personally don't need that service, we know that someone out there, as a result of that vision loss, need that assistance. How many on the commission registry? 28,000. It varies a little bit, but 28,000. Of those, how many, what percentage are over 65 years of age? 75%. So while we do want young people here, please hear me loud and clear. No question. Blindness doesn't say, gee, you're young, therefore you don't have issues. No, it doesn't work that way. Okay? But we have to acknowledge there's an awful lot of people out there we need to reach out to. What's the current membership of Bay State Council? What's your guess? 191. Remember I said we cleaned up our membership rolls. Every one of those 191 is a real person. And they're on the top side of the grass, if you follow me, okay? They're still living here and not in Guatemala or something, okay? It's a real list. So all of that means we need to up our game. Mary and her committee can only do so much. We all know other blind and visually impaired people who aren't with us today, who aren't members of the council. We should be fellowshipping them into our organization because that way they have a voice. I don't think there's anybody out there who feels that, in fact, we, 191 members, represent 70,000 blind people. So I'm asking each of you to make a commitment this year to bring to the council one person. One person. That should allow us to take 191 and double it. They certainly are out there. You know who they are. Fellowship them in. You don't bring them in because you read them a philosophy. Okay? You bring them in because they see what you're doing. They admire what you're doing. And they may have a problem that only we collectively can solve. Not them as individuals, but us as a community. So that's one thing I'd like you to commit to this year. The second and final thing I'd like you to commit to is to think, God, I hate this phrase, but nobody's come up with a better choice. Think outside the box. What can we do differently? If this is the result of what we're doing, size of the membership, size of the treasury, those kinds of things, how can we up our game by just doing the same thing over and over again? Science says that if you don't get the result you want, don't do it again. Do something different. So please communicate with the people you elect to office to make sure they know some cool idea you have on what we could be doing differently or better than we currently do. Because we need to grow. Growth is not just a way of feeling good about yourself. It's a way of staying healthy. We've kind of chuckled about people who've left us over the years. But for everyone who leaves, we need to bring one in just to hold steady. And hold steady is not what we're about. It's about growing as a community. It's about being involved and as national organizations of people with disabilities say, nothing about us without us, right? Nothing about us without us. And we can only do that if we can spread the labor. We do a pretty good job of that in Bay State, but we could always do better. And if we have the resources, both in terms of bodies, participation, I said both, and now I'm doing three things, bodies, participation, and cash. We sent people to Washington, D.C. for the mid-year meetings of ACB. We were very lucky that in addition to the three we funded, we also had three individuals who were selected to represent the younger community through funding through J.P. Morgan Chase. Corey Cadlick, our person who's responsible for social media. Corey, are you in the room? I'm in the room. There he is. J.P. Morgan Chase sent him to D.C. Also, Daisy Russell, are you in the room? She also was sent. I don't know if Min is here this morning. Min Ha, who is the president of ACB Students, was also sent. So Massachusetts does not lack for recognized young leadership and potential. So we have to keep priming the pump, prime it with doers. I'm not interested so much in quantity of members, but quality. That means participating members. And we need your support in funding things. Thank you to Nina and her committee for tonight's auction and the fundraising capability of that. But it's only one of the ways we need to raise some funds. And the board's looking at ways not just to always give opportunities for you to fund Bay State, but for our friends and families and neighbors to help us keep the word going. Also, remember I talked about how people can help out Bay State. Well, we also can help out ACB at the same time. Kim is willing to help you go through the process of MMS, the monetary, how does it go? Say again? Okay, I'll leave Ray to that one. But Kim is in a position to take information from you to help out ACB through partnering with our national organization. We were very, very successful at doing that this past year. ACB has a thing called the ACB Brenda Dillon Walk. And you go out and you get sponsors and you do this cute little toe tap walk around the mall or something along those lines. And you can indicate when you build a team how much goes to which entity. We did 50% to ACB and 50% to BSCB through the president's plural team, state president, national president. And we brought back to the Bay State Council of the Blind $5,000. ACB got $5,000. So that's what I talk about in this whole idea of partnering.
And on that note, we come to the end of Council Connection for the month of May. If you have any questions or comments about the show or anything else, leave us a message in our Fillmore box at 773-572-6312. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, inviting you to join us again in June when we return with another edition of Council Connection. Meantime, enjoy the spring and take care.